Hello, Cobblers fans. Welcome to another special edition of It's All Cobblers to Me. We're still away from our normal episodes this week, but it is New Year's Eve, so a big Happy New Year to you all. This week, we're taking you back to another interview that I performed, this time with a man who saved a penalty at Wembley, had a promotion with the Cobblers at Wembley, and then went on to have a career that was, well, it's seen him work with some of the biggest names in football. Alan Pardew, I do laugh a little bit at what I've just said when I've said that, but also now the goalkeeping coach for the Arsenal under-21s squad. So sit back, relax, and enjoy my interview from earlier this year, or last year, depending on when you're listening to this, with Andy Woodman.
Again, and he's got it!
Gavin was closing in. Oh, Gavin has scored!
Abdul Osman against Brad Jones to put Liverpool out of the cup, and Northampton 3!
Yeah!
Goal!
Yeah! Get it!
Hello and welcome to the It's All Cobblers Hall of Fame. This month I'm talking to a goalkeeper who, along with the Cobblers, played for Exeter, Brentford, Colchester and Oxford United. He made a total of 160 appearances for the Cobblers, including two at Wembley Stadium, where he also saved a penalty. I am, of course, referring to Gareth Southgate's best mate and Cobblers legend, Andy Woodman. To start our chat, I asked Andy how he first got into football and found himself at Crystal Palace.
Really what happened is I always thought I was an outfield player, but my brother, my older brother Peter, used to always chuck me in goal. And then I found myself playing in the school team one game, and there happened to be a scout at this particular match watching me, who then put me forward to represent South London, which is like the borough team. And from there, really, I got spotted to train at Crystal Palace, where I had a few years. Ironically, I went to Arsenal as well, and they wanted to sign me. It was back in the day where it probably wasn't quite as strict as it is now. But Crystal Palace was always my team. So all my family supported Crystal Palace, and that seemed an obvious choice for me to sign for them. And ironically, I find myself at Arsenal now. So kind of a strange twist of fate.
So in 1995, then, you obviously arrive at Sixfields, having just been playing for Exeter the year before. Was it fair to say that you had a bit of a tough time down there at Exeter?
I think that is a complete understatement. I really had a disaster for them. From start to finish, just didn't really happen for me, I moved down there. It was my first time away from home. A few years earlier, I'd lost my mother. I was just a sort of wrong part of my life. And I'm not blaming that on, all of that, but I just wasn't ready for it. And I had this sort of perception that I would just go there, play well, move to a bigger club. I was so wrong. And I tell this all the young boys now, you think you're going to go down to League One, League Two, and it's all going to be easy. You're so mistaken. So it was just one thing after another that went wrong. I got injured, got back in the team, got sent off again, got back in the team after a 7-game ban, and then just made another mistake and another mistake. And I just really was close to calling it a day. And Ian Atkins sort of rung me up, and I thought it was a bit of a joke at first. Said, look, I'd like to sign you, but I can't do it till the end of the season. But I'd like you to come to Northampton. So I didn't think too much of it. And I think I said the other night at the function, I remember watching Teletext at the time, watching Northampton play Bury at home. And they got beat 5-0, and I was dancing around the room because I knew he'd ring me next morning and ask me to come, which he did. And then the rest, really, from there is sort of history, really.
Yeah, in that first season that you were at Sixfields, the team finished 11th in Division 3, as it was back then. But the following year, that's really where everything kind of started changing, and we were Wembley bound and promotion bound as well. What do you think changed that year that led us to being, you know, from 11th position to actually winning the playoffs at Wembley?
Listen, I think we could all say many things, but I think the one man that must take a lot of the credit, if not all the credit, was Ian Atkins. He got a group of players together. We was all sort of wastes and strays from everywhere. We had no egos. We had all different personalities, all different accents. But we had one sort of common goal, really, and that was to try and win football matches and try. We had this camaraderie in the dressing room that I've never matched it anywhere else. You know, I've always been in good dressing rooms, but this place was just unique. And I think it was a lot of those characters he brought together with a winning mentality. And listen, this man was a hard manager, you know, real tough, tough manager. When things were good, he was great. When things were bad, he was so tough on us. And he drilled us. He drilled us all so well. You know, we all knew our jobs. We all knew there was no grey area of anything we had to do. So I think really he should take all the credit for our achievement at Northampton, and probably all the credit for all of our careers.
A lot of people at the minute, they'll talk about managers and how different players have to be treated differently. You know, the whole thing with Mourinho at the moment, maybe the way he's handling some of his players at United isn't the right way, apparently, according to people in the media. What sort of manager was Ian Atkins like? Was he the kind of manager that would, you know, was a good man manager, would put his arm around certain players, or was it a case of more that he'd just shout and everyone would listen?
Do you know, he wasn't a shouter, unless his head really went and then he'd really blow up. And he definitely wasn't an arm around the shoulder. You know, it wasn't that. I think he just made it clear of what your job was. And he made you all crystal clear that, I mean, I played at Northampton 200 games, I think just under. And there wasn't one game that I always thought I'd be first pick and in the team. So he kept us all a little bit, you know, there was a lot of games I thought, yeah, I'm going to be selected, you know. But there was a sort of an element of me always thinking, he could leave me out. And so I think he'd done it of all the players. So he was always right on the edge of, like, not wanting to have a bad game. And of course, we did have bad games, but we always knew we couldn't have, like, two bad games or three bad games on the trot because we would be out of the team. And I think that was how he managed us. And was we the best players? No. Was we the most hard-working team? You could argue we was. And did we all know our jobs? You know, he told me not to come for crosses and not to throw it out. You know, in not as bluntly as that, but pretty much said, let the centre-halves do their job and don't be thrown out from the back. Let's get up to the front man and play off the front man. So I knew my role in the team, you know, and everyone knew their role. And that was what he was really great at, I thought, and you know, set pieces. I don't think there was anyone better than us at the time for scoring goals from set pieces. I really don't.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. The amount of times that, even now, kind of, I look back to, you know, whenever we got a corner, just the sight of Ray Warburton and Ian Sampson at the edge of the penalty area, all about to run in. You kind of felt like you knew it was just going to happen every time.
And John Gale pinning the goalkeeper, you know.
Yeah.
You had this mountain of men. So you always felt completely... Like you say, you're going to get a goal. When a corner come, I always thought to myself, yes, we're going to get one here. And listen, Reza and Samo, some of the goals they scored, there was no one better for timing a header than Reza. In all my footballing career, I'd say, you know, he was sensational. So, yeah, we had that desire to never give up, you know, and always keep going. And we had some great times on the back of that. You know, we all worked for each other.
So one of the questions that I wanted to talk about was, or one of the games I wanted to talk about, was that second leg at home to Bristol Rovers the following year. It must have been some party afterwards.
It was amazing. The whole game was crazy. The actual the actual preparation for us winning that game started as we walked off the pitch at Bristol Rovers. I'm sure you've heard it a million times. The guy on the end, the tannoy, singing Wembley, us walking down the tunnels, the opposition players saying, "You've got any spare tickets for Wembley, you boys?" and all that, you know, sort of goading us because they thought they'd won it. And that particular game at Bristol Rovers, they should have won it by 6 or 7 goals. We were so bad that day. And we managed to get a goal from John Gow. So when we got in the dressing room and shut the dressing room, and we heard them in their dressing room, and I'm sure there's loads of teams that have done this in the past, but it really kind of, we sat there and, again, Ian Atkins made us kind of almost, in a clever, silent sort of way, listen to their celebrations. We kind of got together on the bus and, you know, this game's not over. We started believing from that moment and we started sort of saying, let's make sure that what they just did to us in that tunnel and that man on the tannoy, that we really sort of spin this around. Now, I'm sure this has happened loads of times over the years and, you know, the result ends up being the result. But that kind of inspired us as a team, that moment. And then we get to Six Fields, the place was, you know, electric that night, absolutely electric. And I generally believe everyone turned up expecting us, we were just going to win, us included. So I think all of the atmosphere going into the game, you know, we knew there was nothing else we could do. John Gow in the tunnel intimidating one of their players, which sounds bizarre. Now I'm a grown man, you know, but he was literally bouncing a ball off the opposition centre-half's head, who wouldn't look at him. And I'm not even exaggerating this. And I remember John Gow saying, "What are you going to do about this then?" "Nothing. I'm gonna, you know, smash you up all on the pitch," you know, like all intimidating. And I remember thinking to myself, this is crazy. And then we went out there and Carl Heggs was brilliant that night. And we got the result. You know, it was just an amazing night.
Warburton and Sampson, the two on the edge of the penalty area. Warburton arriving, and he's got it. Ray Warburton, the Northampton skipper, with his first goal of the season, could well have scored the goal which takes his side through to Wembley.
Obviously, you appeared at Wembley twice for the Cobblers, in consecutive years, obviously, in 97 and 98. You obviously got to experience the highs of winning and then the lows of the defeat. But what were those games like for you?
In a bizarre way, to have the loss after you've won there gives you a complete contrast of what a different stadium that place is. One that I wish I'd never been able to experience, I have to say. But the first year we won, it was amazing. You know, the feeling, the feeling for your family, the relief for your family, the relief for your season, how hard we'd worked and how hard we'd kept going. So that was fantastic and a day never to be forgot. The following year, to lose, and if I'm to be really honest, to never really look like you was going to win, and come off the pitch and almost feel like you'd kind of given yourself a disservice on that particular day as a team. Not as individuals, but as a team. We kind of, you know, hadn't hit the heights that we should have, we felt could have had on that day. It was horrendous. I think of a memory, Samo just walked straight off the pitch after, didn't even, you know, stay on the pitch. I can't really remember too much about the pitch or being on the pitch. I was devastated. And then I think that was sort of like the start where you sort of see the following year effects coming into play, and you know you're not quite the same team, and everyone's mind slightly somewhere else, or still on the year before, and you see it many times when teams get to the playoff the following season, they're not quite the same, and you can almost see that in us. And looking back, even myself, you know, I was kind of thinking, was that my big chance to get a move or play in a bigger league gone? And I'm sure we all kind of had different mindsets when we come back. And that was really a shame for me personally and for everyone involved at the club that we didn't kind of get up that year.
Well, Kevin Donovan has scored from open play. Can he now score from the spot to finally kill off Northampton? Still have hope here. Alan Buckley cannot believe it. Woodman has denied the penalty.
Well, maybe justice is done. I don't know.
stick. Donovan, surely that a shielder. Widman to the rescue. Chooses right, full stretch, and palms it away.
I think the one thing that I kind of always sort of look back on, if you like, is that, my dad used to say this only up until a couple of years ago, really, which was that obviously that day Grimsby win, they get promoted to Division One, but then what, 5 years later, they were out of the Football League altogether. Whereas, yes, we'd gone, you know, stayed down, and then obviously the following year we get relegated again back to the Division Three, the basement, but at least we were still in the Football League. And my dad used to say to me, well, you see, if we'd won that day, that might have been us, and we wouldn't even be a league club anymore. At least we've got that to be thankful for. But yeah. I suppose for yourself as a player, like you say, you could have got a big move on the back of that. You know, you saved a penalty that day. One of the, you know, the few people to save a penalty in a final at Wembley.
Yeah, I think for me personally, I always wanted to play at the highest level I could. And I was at that particular time, I know I'd been linked to a few clubs. And it wasn't really my desire to move from Northampton because I was so happy there. So I think in my sort of memory, I was kind of almost wishing we'd go up and then we'd be a big club in my mind, and a big, you know, we'd be a, you know, championship club as it would be then. And it'd be a real crack at the sort of like the big time, one blow to Premiership. Who knows what can happen after that, you know, where it happens. And I think because we didn't make it that year, kind of there was a flatness with all of us. And then, you know, from a strictly selfish point of view, I was really like, you know, am I ever going to play in a higher league? You know, am I ever going to, I wanted to do it at Northampton. And then you start looking at other people that have gone up and other players, and you kind of get distracted. And I'd be first to admit that following season, I was nowhere near where I should have been mentally as a goalkeeper. I was carrying an injury from that final as well. I tore my shoulder, rotator cuff, in the actual game when the guy scored the goal. I almost popped my shoulder at his socket. And I, unbeknown to me at the time, because the adrenaline's pumping, I thought, oh, that'd be okay over the summer. I didn't think nothing of it. And then I started back the following season and I had major problems with his shoulder, to the point where I had to have, you know, scans, and he showed up 3 tears from that game. So that coincided with the disappointment. I was not the same keeper, you know, that following season. And I put the two together. You know, I'd got the injury that I was trying to mask, that I hadn't got sorted out properly, which I should have had an operation on it. And I just was carrying over like the disappointment of playing at a higher level, playing at a higher level with the club I loved and the people I love, new faces now coming in. It kind of, the pack was getting shuffled a little bit. I think Razor went to Rushden. There was a lot of new changes, you know. I think Ian Atkins was being talked about going to Norwich at that point as manager. And there was a lot of uncertainty around the place. And that was my first time at being at that club that I'd seen all this uncertainty around me. And I have to be honest now, I'm a lot older, maturer. It definitely affected me, definitely.
I mean, one of the things that I remember with that season, so the year that we actually go down, the year that you leave us, actually, is that we had a fairly poor start to the season. You've kind of already explained how that possibly could have come about. But we had a really decent League Cup run where we looked, you know, brilliant. The night that we played West Ham at home and won 2-0, that was a fairly comfortable 2-0 win. I mean, is playing in the League Cup or the other cup competitions just a real breather from league football and you know, the worry about getting points on the board, or does that not really exist?
Again, looking at it through our older eyes and wiser eyes, or is it a showcase to show everyone that you can play at a high level? Maybe that was why I was so up for those games. You know, I played particularly well in both of those games and the Tottenham game. Say the Ginola's penalty in the Tottenham game. I got man of the match against West Ham at West Ham. So looking back, was I just a bit single-minded there and thinking, oh, this is my chance to get a move to the big clubs? And, you know, because it's no slur on Northampton. I must make that clear because I love that place. But we all have aspirations to play at the highest we can. And maybe you know, maybe that isn't the reason why players play so well in those cup competitions, because you feel like you're on show a little bit, you know, to show everyone what you're about. Whereas when you're playing at Plymouth away or Bury away, you know there's not going to quite be the people there to watch it and the sort of clueless around the game. You know, so maybe it's a mixture of all of that. But those cup games were great. You know, I enjoyed those. There's so many different variations of why the season went wrong. But I just think we had a lot of things happening after that season. And I just think we had a bad start. And we never really had that team spirit. You know, new players were coming in. Old favourites were going out. There was a bit of uncertainty around the place. And I just felt that happens at football clubs, not just at Northampton, but that happens at clubs as a three-year period where things change, and sometimes they change for the worst.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you see it all the time. We've seen it, you know, time and time again since. You know, the last two times that we've been promoted to League One from League Two, Calderwood and Chris Wilder, both of those teams basically got not ripped apart as such, but they changed because we lost the manager each time as well. So, it still happens today. There's always a transition period that happens, isn't there? By the time that January came around, you were out of the team then, and Billy Turley had basically taken the number one shirt, and it wasn't long before you signed for Brentford. Was that because you kind of went, my time's up here now and it's time to go and play for a bigger club? Could you maybe see the fact that we were maybe going in the wrong direction and you wanted to stay, you know, get paid as much as you could, obviously, and also stay and play at the highest level that you could as well?
Yeah, thinking back, again, I'm sort of going back 20 years. I remember being left out of the team for a game, which I thought was a bit unfair, and I think it was a cup game or something. And I was always a bit of a fiery character, you know. I kind of understand that now. And let me tell you, I've told my son many times, don't be like I was. And I got left out for a game, and rather than stay and watch the game, kind of just got in my car, went home, which was completely the wrong thing to do. Completely the wrong thing to do. Anyway, when I came in on a Monday, the manager, rightly so, Ian Atkins, pulled me in his office, you're out of order, you know, and completely. Rather than me saying, look, I'm sorry, I kind of blew up the other way as well. Well, I can't believe they left me out, usual sort of row with the manager. But it continued, the row. You know, this was a guy that I loved, and to this day I still love the man. And we had a fallout, you know, in that respect. You know, it was just... I looked at it as a fallout. He would have looked at it as exactly what it was, really. He was just dropping a goalkeeper that wasn't playing as well as he did the season before and putting in someone that he felt was better than him at the time. But at that particular time of my life, I took it a little bit personally, which really wasn't the right thing to do. And looking back, it completely wasn't personal because it's football. So I was a little bit immature, you know, and this is me being brutally honest. And I'd got a little bit of a nudge from Ron Nodes, who was my old chairman at Palace, who was now the manager at Brentford. He rung me up and said, look, you're not in the team. Would you want to come to Brentford? And I said, well, yeah, of course I'd come to Brentford. I'm not playing. I said, you know, when will it happen? He said, look, just sit on your hands. Don't try to get back in the team. That's exactly his words, God rest his soul. He said, and I will come and sign you in January. Well, I thought, listen, I've heard this a million times. This is not going to happen. And actually, it did happen. He came back and signed me. There was a little bit of a grey area. I think some of the board wanted to keep me. Some didn't. I was owed some payments, which I was reminded of the other night by one of the old directors, which we liked. And he actually told me the figure. It was £4,000, which is pathetic in the scheme of things. So we had a bit of a hoo-ha. And anyway, I ended up going to Brentford. And again, I walked into a club where it was different, and I didn't have my centre-halves in front of me I played with, and it was a different feel. And we won the league that year. We went up as champions, but I was never quite the goalkeeper I was at Northampton, and I always felt like that. My best time was at Northampton. My best playing time was at Northampton, And you know what? It was no coincidence. I had the best two centre-halves in front of me at Northampton, in my opinion. So, you know, I'm not too immature or blasé to think that I was the best ever, but I think I just hit the right time at the right place with the right players and the right manager at Northampton. So it was a shame how it finished.
Brain again, and he's got it! What a marvellous goal from John Frayne. Ian Atkins off the bench. The Northampton supporters ecstatic.
What was your best memory then of being at Northampton then, Woody?
My best memory, I'd be hard pushed to say the Wembley win was my best memory. I would really be hard to say, although I do think that what we achieved down at Cardiff, getting a 1-0 down there, kind of went under the radar because that was an unbelievable result we got down there. You know, to get that, to go down there, keep a clean sheet and get a 1-0 and have a player sent off, I think we had as well. Mark Cooper got sent off in that game, all right. That went under the radar, but that was one hell of a performance down there.
Most of our listeners are going to know that you're friends with Gareth Southgate, the England manager. The question that I've actually got for you, we've got a couple of listener questions as well in a moment, but the thing that I want to know is you've obviously coached as a goalkeeper coach at the highest level in the Premier League. Why didn't he employ you as England's goalkeeper coach? What's the deal there? He's your best mate.
Hey, perhaps you should ring him on that and ask him. To be fair, it doesn't always work like that. Our friendship's been based on our friendship. And to be fair, when I was with Alan Pardew, me and Alan have been friends for many years also. I've always been with Alan Pardew wherever I've gone. So when Gareth got the England job, I was at Crystal Palace with Alan Pardew, I think it was at the time. So for me to just, listen, I wasn't asked, let me make that very clear, but I don't think it would have been right for Gareth just to suddenly get rid of all his staff and say, I want to bring in my mates. And it wasn't something I expected him to do either. Don't get me wrong, we had many conversations in the car about goalkeepers and chatting and just general conversations as well. But it's something that I've never really expected, wanted, or really thought about, really. I have been asked it many times, so I haven't got the answer to that. On the flip side of that, my son's in England set up. He's been in there since he's 15. So he's gone through all the age groups to the under-21s where he's playing at the moment. So you could even argue that even if I would have been lucky enough to be offered the job and I wasn't, and you know, would it have been the right thing for me to take with my son being involved in England? I think it would have come with a lot of, well, you're only in it because your dad and all those sort of things around him. So again, that would have been another hurdle for me to get over. But yeah, never been asked to coach for England and... you know, and there's a, listen, let me make this really clear. There's a fantastic coach there at the moment. Martin Margeson, fantastic coach and a good friend of mine. He was actually the guy that replaced me when I got sacked from Palace. So he's got that job off me. Then he got the job for England. And I said to him, when he rung me up, you're not going to move in my house, are you, as well. but no, they've got a great England goalie coach there at the moment. And they've got a great young crop of goalkeepers in the team and coming through, which is good.
And Peñaranda then bring Venezuela level. In the final. Oh, it's saved by Woodman!
So just let us know then what you're doing now at the moment then, because obviously you're not actually a goalkeeper coach for a club alongside Alan Pardew as a manager at the moment, are you?
Yes, at the moment. So I had a spell, well, many years of Alan at Newcastle, Crystal Palace, and then got asked to go to West Brom. But at that particular time, I was at Arsenal. I've been offered a role at Arsenal to be head of goalkeeping, to coach the goalkeepers on the grass from 23s, and then oversee all the goalkeepers all the way down. So make sure we've got the right keepers coming in the building, go and scout some keepers if the time's there, to really have an overview of it and make sure the coaches are doing the right sort of stuff with these young keepers. From a personal point of view, you know, I know how the parents are feeling because I've got a son that's going through the process. I know how the young goalies are feeling at times, whether it's high or low, because because again, I've got some that's going through the process, and I know exactly how they feel when they make a mistake or they make a top class save. Because once upon a time, I used to make the odd save, and once upon a time, I used to make the odd mistake. So I kind of feel that for all these certificates we have to go through and all these coaching badges, I don't think there's anybody better to sort of, you know, liaise with these young, budding professionals and sort of guide them a little bit, as well as coach them of, look, I've done that. I've had rounds of managers. I've, you know, thrown my toys out of prayer when I've not been in the team, and to try and guide them away from all the things that I had, you know, done wrong, and hopefully implement all the things that I've done well but probably didn't do enough of. And again, if you listen to any interviews my son does, he's done many interviews over the years, he kind of always goes back to, like, you know, my dad's told me all the things not to do and the things to do, and he's quite true. You know, I've just passed on my experience of this business to him.
So we've got some questions in from some of our listeners as well, Andy. There's only a few of them, and they should be fairly quick fire as well. Jeremy Casey wants to know who the better centre-back was, Samo or Reza?
Do you know what? You ain't going to believe it, but we had this conversation in the car, because before the other night, I picked up Samo and we went out a quick beer with Reza. So there's three of us. So I got them both in the car and I said, Reza, you was a top centre half. Samo jumped straight down my throat, telling me all the things Reza couldn't do, but he could do. So Samo was more cultured with the ball at his feet. Reza was just a lump it in the corner merchant. Yeah, but Samo, you couldn't win headers and corners and all that. Yeah, but Reza, you know, they both had great attributes. I'd have to say that. If I was to really put my head on the block, and I'm not going to be popular with one of them here, and then I think Raywell Burton was a leader, and everyone had a lot of respect for Reza on the pitch and off it. Not that they didn't for Samo, but Reza was top draw, and Samo was... They were very, very close behind, very close. There was nothing between them, except Raza was the captain, I'm going to say, and he just had that little bit, tiny little bit. Samo's going to be straight on the phone to me.
David says, please ask Woody if he is happy with your son Freddie's progression and whether Gareth Southgate has spoken to him about possible international honours for him. I'm presuming he means their senior honours.
Yeah, am I happy with my son's progression? I was very happy with my son's progression. In fact, I was extremely happy with my son's progression. The achievements he's made, the strides he's made have been fantastic. You know, couldn't be happier. Am I a little bit disappointed he hasn't gone out alone this year? Yeah, very disappointed. But that's the business of Newcastle United Football Club. That's how they, you know, they obviously have their own plan for him. So I can't really comment on what their plan is for him. Is he going to be a top keeper even more than he is? 100%. You know, he's got all the attributes, you know, that I probably didn't have off the pitch and on it. So I'm very happy with that. I know Gareth speaks to Freddie when he sees him at St George's Park. But that said, he doesn't just single out Freddie. I know Gareth speaks to all the players there. So, and I think that's, you know, testament to Gareth Southgate as a human being and as a manager. He's never been any different. He will give everybody time. So I know that he'll, you know, along with, you know, I must make this really clear, along with probably any other goalkeeper or any other player at that St George's Park, right from under 16s to under 21s to the first team, I know Gareth would always speak to them and give them, you know, words of wisdom and encouragement, because that's just Gareth Southgate. So, yeah, you know, there's no favouritism in any way, shape or form. But I do know that he would definitely have spoken to him and many other players.
Yeah, no suggestion there at all that he'd be singling out his godson or anything like that. Don't you worry about that at all, Andy.
Yeah, well, listen, I'm a bit disappointed he didn't play against USA last night, to be honest.
Would have been a perfect opportunity, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, listen, we've got a bet going. We'd have cashed in there. That is a joke, by the way. Let me make that clear.
So Rod Clare has asked if you remember him and Tracy, who got married at Sixfields.
Yeah.
He said that they're still together and Tracy still loves you more, apparently.
Well, I'm a bit disappointed they've stayed together this long because I've been hanging about for Tracy ever since because I thought it would never last. But listen, tell Tracy, I've lost a bit of hair now and put a bit of weight on, so I'm not probably sure. I think she's probably better off staying with Rob.
Brilliant.
And congratulations to them because that must be 20-odd years. 20 years, I thought. 19 years.
Yeah, it must be. Well, it'll be around about the 20-year mark, won't it now, I would imagine. Fantastic. That's brilliant. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, well, congratulations to them and testament to them.
Yeiston Pocock would like to know how you supported your friend Gareth Southgate during the World Cup. Was there anything that you did in particular on the phone to him every day, offering him words of advice of what to do for the next game, anything like that?
Well, it's funny. I didn't do one interview during the World Cup. I didn't speak to one newspaper during the World Cup, leading up to, after, nothing. You're probably the first person I spoke to since then. And simply because there was nothing I was going to say to the newspapers, to the TV, to the press that wasn't something that we already know. This guy's a top man. He's going to be a top manager and he's doing a great job. So I didn't need to do that. We were friends. But, yeah, I spoke to him throughout the tournament. Do you know what? I actually just spoke to him like a friend, really, because when you're cocooned on a tournament like that, you get sick of talking about football. I know it sounds bizarre, but you generally do. So sometimes we just catch up. It might be on WhatsApp or text, you know, and just a general, you know, 5-minute chat on that, just to see how things are and try to keep it all real for him. But it was a fantastic achievement for him, for the country, for everyone involved. I couldn't have been proud.
It's going to be a penalty shootout to find out who the final quarter-finalists at the 2018 World Cup will be. England's fourth World Cup shootout. Nobody needs reminding what happened in the previous three.
England are out of the World Cup.
Falcao versus Pickford, Colombia versus England, and Falcao hammers it home. It's over to England. Harry Kane. That is outstanding from Kane. What it's like stepping up and taking one when your country's hopes of staying in the World Cup are on the line. Henderson puffs out his cheeks. Henderson strides up and it's saved by Ospina.
Oh, no!
Advantage Colombia. And Arriba hits the bar. England back in the game. Trippier. Penalties taken, 3-3 in the shootout, and it is now sudden death time. Macca looks confident. Saved by Pickford! A great big hand from England's goalkeeper. What a save! Has just given Eric Dyer the chance to send England through. Think of all those years of hurt.
England faces will just reflect sheer disappointment.
Eric Dyer to stride up to change a little bit of that for England. And yes. Dyer does it! England win a World Cup penalty shootout for the first time ever! Maybe times are changing. This team is changing things.
Do you ever look back on your career, Andy, and just sort of look at Gareth's career and go, that could have been me? Is there any kind of not resentment towards Gareth, obviously, but you know, sort of regret for your own professional football career in that respect? You've seen your best mate play for England and now manage them.
I don't so much do that. There is times you always look back on your career and think, blimey, I could have done better there, or could have maybe done a bit better there, or done more of that, or this, that. But you have to sort of go back to when you was that age. And listen, I'll never use this as an excuse because you know, where I was brought up was, you know, not the ideal place. I was brought up as a kid. My background was a nice family, but my mum died when I was young. So I had a lot of things going on in my life. Now, I said this to my son, and he said, "Dad, you shouldn't have that as an excuse." But unless you've lived it, it's very difficult to, when you're actually living all these things at the time, it's very difficult to sort of focus on what's happening or what you should be doing. So you know, the flip side of that, I look at it and with quite a lot of pride of really what I did achieve with kind of a lot of adversity along the route. And I'd like to think that a lot of players that played at the lower levels like myself, you know, they look at their careers with a lot of pride because we could always do a little bit more. You know, and there's always different scenarios you'd like to change, but you can't, and you have to live in the moment. And the things I chose to do at the moment, at that time of my life, were the things I thought were the right things to do. So I try not to look back. I look back with fond memories, nothing more fond than my time at Northampton. So I don't look at Gareth with any resentment at all. Very, very proud of my friend. No one, and I genuinely mean this, deserves it more than him.
So Danny wants to know whether you remember the celebrations in 97 on the bus parade and whether you can recount anything that you might have been saying to the fans from on high.
Well, I remember nearly falling off the bus on the top deck. Me and Dave Martin, he nearly went and I nearly went over the top. So I remember that really clearly, thinking, oh, blimey, I need to slow up here. And then I remember trying to get some fans on the bus. It all got a bit crazy, but the one thing that I struggled to get my head around is we actually had a journey from Sixfields to the town on this open top bus, and then years later when we watched that Mike Bassett film, the Mike Bassett's going up the dual carriageway with the team on the bus and all the wind's blowing, it was very much like that. And then we pulled into the town and all of a sudden there was like, I want to say about 100,000 people. I don't know if I'm exaggerating, but the town was, you could not move. And I find that still to this day very surreal and very kind of almost unbelievable that all those people turned out for us on that day. And it was, that was, as a personal moment, that was one of the greatest days ever. That I really enjoyed that.
So the last question that we've got from our listeners then, Andy, is to ask whether you still love Hawaii 5-0, as is stated in the Wembley 97 song by Warehouse.
Let me tell you, to this day, I never, ever lived that song down. Do you know what? I think I might even have a hair transplant in the summer just to have one more song, one more rendition of it. It used to be a great bit of banter with the people up in the top corner of the main stand. You still start it off. Yeah, never forget that song. And like I say, I had a fantastic rapport with the fans there. I'm sure I wasn't everyone's cup of tea as a goalkeeper, but I always think I used to play with a smile on my face and always try my best for those people that paid to watch. I definitely remember that time.
That's brilliant. The very last thing, we're asking every single person that we interview on It's All Cobblers to Me, just to give your Cobblers five-a-side team. So these are players that you played with at Northampton. Just your favourite five-a-side team. You can go in goal unless you want to put somebody else in there instead.
Yeah, I put myself. Oh, I wasn't great at five-a-side though, was I? I put myself in goal. I definitely wouldn't put Razza in a five-a-side team. No chance. But then maybe I'm doing him a disservice. I'd probably have to have Sam Ambrose as my centre halves. I would have to have Ali Gibb on one wing. And I would probably have, I think I'd have to have Roy Hunter in there. And up front, I would probably have to have Big John Gow.
No question there, I don't think. That was always going to be the case, wasn't it?
So, as you could probably tell by my team, it was surrounded by giants. Just in case they decided to put a cross in the box.
That's brilliant, Andy. Thank you very much for that.
Absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Anytime.